Welcome to the Think TLH podcast, brought to you by the Knight Creative Communities Institute. This is a show about innovators, creative thinkers, and individuals that are making transformative change here in Tallahassee, Florida. Today, I'm here with Greg Bobinger, physics professor at Florida State University and the University of Florida, and director of the National High Magnetic Field Laboratory based out of Tallahassee, Florida, which is also home to the 16 largest magnets in the world.
Yes, it is.
Greg, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about how you started your career and how you ended up in Tallahassee.
So it's a long circuitous route. I grew up in Indiana and went to Purdue University for undergraduate studies in physics, electrical engineering, and philosophy. And then after that, I went to England to do research for a year, and then I got my PhD at MIT in Boston. Then went to France for a year, and then to Bell Laboratories in New Jersey. And I did my research at MIT in high magnetic fields. That was where the National Magnet Lab was then in the 80s. And so I became interested in high magnetic fields as a research tool. When I went to Bell Laboratories in New Jersey in 1987, I spent 11 years building up a very nice research establishment to do high magnetic field research. And then a decision was made to move the National Lab to this consortium of Florida State University and University of Florida and Los Alamos National Laboratory. So you're correct in saying that we're based in Tallahassee, but we have branch campuses down in Gainesville and in Los Alamos, New Mexico. And it was clear that the resources and the scientific opportunity lay with this new mag lab, if you will. And so I left Bell Laboratories, headed up the branch of the magnet lab in Los Alamos for 6 years, and then came here, and starting April Fool's Day 2004, I took this job as director of the mag lab, and I have responsibilities for all three campuses.
Well, it's definitely been no joke, the
yes.
successes you have found
yes.
since you've been here. And what do you think it is about Tallahassee that promotes that innovation and the creativity and, you know, draws some of these top scientists in the world to do their research here in Tallahassee?
So at the founding of the Magnet Lab, our founding director, Jack Crow, was able to marshal an alliance between FSU and University of Florida, and also with the chancellor and the board of governors, to really make this big play at the national level, to not only move the nation's magnet lab from its existing location at MIT down to this new location, but in fact to expand the vision to include chemistry and biology and biomedicine. And so I think the willingness to think big, and one of the beauties of the American educational system is that states can find areas in which they feel they can excel. And so at least in our case, we're leading the world now in high magnetic field research because investments were made in the magnet lab and continue to be made in the magnet lab by our host institutions to keep us at the cutting edge. Our core funding comes from the federal government through the National Science Foundation, but we get plenty of other grants that get written that give us support from Department of Energy, from National Institutes of Health. But the partnership is really unusual here because the state and the state universities and Los Alamos National Lab are so committed to our success as well that they make contributions. Where I grew up, the first place I noticed that was actually at Purdue University. With the space program, Purdue decided that it would excel in engineering, which was its traditional strength, but in particular, it would be strong in the training of astronauts. And more astronauts have come from Purdue than any other university. You wouldn't ordinarily know that, but you have these regional strengths, in our case, Florida State University and University of Florida, that can decide areas in which they want to have a big impact. And it's really fun to be part of that sort of initiative.
Well, and also, if I understand correctly, the funding from the National Science Foundation and the state of Florida, that allows researchers to come and use the Mag Lab facilities for free.
Yes. So researchers need to put in a proposal, and they compete on scientific merit. So only the researchers that have the best ideas for the science to get done get magnet time. So there's what you want, which is a competitive environment so that the best science gets done with a limited resource. But to burden the individual researcher with the expense of our magnets, some of which cost $3,000 an hour in electricity bill alone, not to mention all of the expertise in our staff of technicians and engineers and scientists to make the experiment successful. There's no way you could burden individual scientists with that. So they have to compete, but it's on the science. And then if they win that science competition to get access to our magnets, then all of the facilities and the techniques, the know-how and the scientific support comes for free.
And how fascinating, I mean, to have more than like 1,600, you know, almost 2,000 yes. scientists a year coming in
yes.
from all over the world
yes,
to
absolutely.
Study at our mag lab.
Right. And that it creates a very exciting environment, I think, for our students as well as for our community. Because, you know, Tallahassee's a medium-sized city. It's not in a major metropolitan area. In fact, one of the things I think that's so wonderful about it is that you can get out in the countryside. You're not cheek by jowl with neighboring cities. But that does lead to a certain scope of vision, if you will, or scope of experience, perhaps, is a better way to say it, for our community and our students. So our students, we have about 220 students that do research here at the Magnet Lab, and they get to be part of this international community where scientists are literally coming from all over the world. We haven't had anyone from Antarctica yet.
Oh, there's always a first.
That's right. They've come from all other continents. And we have something like 60, 70 countries represented in our staff of technicians, engineers, and scientists. So folks come from all over the world to work here. And that's one of the things that makes the open house so much fun, is that folks in Tallahassee can come and talk to people from all over the world. My parents enjoy the open house, not just for the technology, but just for the opportunity to talk to people whose life experience is so different than their own.
Tell us a little bit more about the open house.
So the open house is held every year the last Saturday in February, so it's February 23rd, 2019, and it's 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. We have about 100 hands-on exhibits and events. We bring in other scientific organizations and community organizations, and it's just too much fun. We have about 8,000 people coming through the lab, but you would never know the crowd is that big. It's lively, it's all ages. We have food service out in with the food trucks out front, and you just get a chance to talk with the scientists, to see what they do, to look at demonstrations, and we have all kinds of weird things. We make ice cream with liquid nitrogen, and we shoot potatoes out of a potato cannon, and we do things that have to do with magnets as well.
You all do a great job with the open house. I have
two
elementary school children, and we have brought them for a couple years, and they're always fascinated, and especially for having a little girl and a boy who are into science and
yes.
math, it's
yes.
just, it's so neat for them to see how some of those mathematical principles are put into use.
Yes.
And even something as trivial as a potato gun, but you know, how they're able to learn a little bit about the science behind that.
The amazing thing is that, and we've worked really hard on this, that our scientists get equally energized when they interact with these kids. And they have worked, and we've worked with them to help them learn how to explain what the concepts are at all different levels. And so what is taking place here? And so, yeah, it's pretty cool to blast a potato out of a cannon, but you also get a sense of storing energy and then releasing that energy. And so the thing that's always amazed me with my own kids when they were younger is that they wanted every year, you know, their kids and like, oh, do we have to do this again? And then they would come at opening and they would stay the full 5 hours. So we see a lot of the same folks every year, and then we see a lot of new folks every year. And literally, it's infant in arms all the way up to age, well, my mom is 81 this year, and she'll be 82 come the next open house, and she'll be here.
Well, let's go back a little bit to some of the research that's conducted here. I know oftentimes, you know, that research is published.
Yes.
You all have been in more than 400 scientific publications
right.
a year on average, and you're in peer-reviewed journals such as Nature, Science, Physical Review Letters. But tell us a little bit, or do you have an example or two of how some of that science goes back and helps our everyday lives?
Yes. So we are here because of the research that gets done. And so ultimately, that research gets publicized through peer-reviewed papers in the professional literature. And you mentioned three of the more prominent journals. One of the things that's most exciting about being director of the Magnet Lab is the breadth of research. And so there's research in physics and material science, and we lump that under a heading of materials. And then you've got physics and chemistry, and there's a lot of research under energy. And then you get sort of chemistry, biochemistry, and biomedicine, and that we call life. So materials, energy, and life. And it's sometimes easiest to explain in average terms that folks can grasp by starting with the life side. So as an example, we do magnetic resonance imaging at higher magnetic fields than anywhere else. Well, why is that important? Some people may not be aware that MRIs use magnets, and they use magnets in order to avoid exploratory surgery. You folks are all too young, but I'm old enough to remember that if you had a pain in your gut and they didn't know what was wrong with you, there was no MRI, there was no CAT scan. They would cut you open and start exploring. And that's why they call it exploratory surgery. Who would have thought magnets would more or less do away with exploratory surgery and give you actually much better information about what's going on inside your body? The higher the magnetic field, the higher the definition of the MRI image. So we're allowing MRI to go high def. And all of the MRIs that doctors use look just at hydrogen. Why do they look at hydrogen? Well, you're mostly water, and water is H2O,
right.
two atoms of hydrogen. For each atom of oxygen. So you've got a lot of hydrogen, and that's the best way to make a sharp image of what's inside your body. And that's why you can see soft tissue and organs and everything, whereas x-rays tend to see heavy elements like calcium, like your bones. So advancing MRI technology is important, and we're actually starting to look at other elements than hydrogen. Because we have high magnetic fields, we can look at sodium. Why would you be interested in sodium? Well, cells before they die take up sodium. And nobody knows why. But if we have, and our magnets are only good enough to use on mice and rats, they're not big enough for human beings. So we're doing the basic research that later will be turned into the medical techniques. So if we've got a rat that has a brain tumor, we can give it just a taste of a certain type of chemotherapy without any side effects because it's such a small sample. And if we notice that the tumor lights up, when we look at the sodium, we know that the tumor cells are sucking up sodium, so we know that they would die if we gave a heavier dose of chemotherapy. So we learn all of this within just a day or two. And so you can try all these different types of chemotherapy to find the one that will attack that tumor, that lights up that tumor, and then you give the big heavy dose with all the nasty side effects that really impacts your body's immune system, but you know it's going to work.
Right.
And the way chemotherapy works now, they don't always know which chemotherapy treatment to give. So in the future, when magnets are still bigger, we will probably be able to do sodium MRI on human beings and be able to hit the tumor with exactly the right chemotherapy the first time out, which would be a spectacular breakthrough.
And then people are on the path for a faster, healthier recovery.
The way it is now, you sometimes wait weeks to learn if the tumor is shrinking after all the tumor cells have died and started to get it absorbed by your body. We can tell before they even die that they're going to die, which is a pretty amazing capability brought to you by high magnetic fields. And for energy, we analyze petroleum so that we can tell different ways to refine petroleums that come out of different wells. Each well has a different fingerprint, if you will. But the only way you can get a clear enough image of which chemicals are in which sample of petroleum is by having a high enough magnetic field. We actually weigh every molecule, and we can write down the chemical formula of every molecule, and we can identify 100,000 different chemicals in a single drop of oil. So why is that important? Well, you can determine whether the sulfur is going to cause pollution or not, and it depends on what exact chemical compounds are in the oil. You can change the way you refine the oil to get a better product out of the oil. If there's an oil spill, we can actually track the oil spill. We can tell the origin of a tar ball. We actually learned what tar balls were. I thought we knew what tar balls are, but it turns out that after the Deepwater Horizon spill, we got heavily involved in tracing petroleum through the environment. And some chemical compounds don't cause pollution. There's bacteria that see that as food. But there's other chemical compounds that oxidize and form these big, ugly tar balls and become pollution. We are starting to understand that on a single molecule by molecule basis. We do research on solar cells, next generation solar cells, that need high magnetic fields so that you can learn how they work. And then the final area is materials. And people often don't realize how important materials are to life. But think about it. There was a Stone Age. Stone is a material.
Right.
Then we had the Copper Age. Copper is a material. Then we had the Bronze Age. That's the first material that was invented by human beings, where we actually created something that doesn't exist in nature, a new material that allowed sharper blades, sharper spear points that don't dull up. And then you go into the Iron Age. And then arguably skyscrapers are the Steel Age. And then the Silicon Age. Without silicon, there are no computers. You and I aren't sitting here talking right now without silicon.
Right.
So now, what is it that people use new materials for? Your cell phone has 24 materials that did not exist 25 years ago, had not been invented. Everything from the Gorilla Glass on the front that gets a lot of press because even though it does crack, it's a heck of a lot tougher than any other material, to the shatter-resistant plastics on the back. Those of us who were around in the 70s remember that plastics used to always break. The case on your transistor radio would break long before the transistor radio broke. And now you can flex the plastic, and it's wafer thin and yet still survives. But those are the two easy ones. The one I like to point to is the battery technologies. There's no way a cell phone could work on battery technologies even 5 years ago. The batteries keep getting better, but we keep adding more functionality. But think of the touchscreen. It only works because it's a metal, but it has to be see-through. Think
right.
of every other metal in your life. It's shiny and reflective. You know, some of them are gold, some of them are copper, most of them are silver colored. But this is a metal on your touchscreen that's transparent. There's a lot of research that gets done using high magnetic fields to understand exactly how the electrons move in these metals that lies behind this invention of new materials so that we can get next generation technologies like the cell phone.
There's so many examples.
Energy and life. Those are the big three.
All ways that directly impact our every day,
Absolutely.
Every hour, every
Absolutely.
5 minutes
in
of our
lives.
In ways
that you don't notice and that you may not recognize come from fundamental research and in particular high magnetic field research.
And many of that, a lot of that research is happening right here in
yes.
Tallahassee, Florida.
Yeah, this is the largest magnet laboratory in the world. And in terms of scientific output, number of publications, we exceed the total output of all the other magnet labs in the world put together.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is about Tallahassee that supports innovation and new ideas, progressive ideas?
I think that, to me, it's a wonderfully sized city with a tradition that spans the arts and creativity and has now been expanding into the sciences and some of the STEM fields, the engineering and mathematics, technology, and science. The thing that I was just stunned about when I came to Tallahassee, because I came for the magnet lab.
Right.
You know, when you're a physicist and you're looking for the next job, you don't say, where would I like to live? There are so few physics jobs that you find the job that best matches your interests, and then you go there, and then you find reasons to be excited about living there. And the thing that struck me when I came to Tallahassee is the depth and breadth of the arts program. And in particular, I love music and was pleased to serve on the board of directors for the University of Music Associates and still go to most of their events. And the jazz here is just off scale spectacular. And so I really have become an evangelist for Tallahassee as a cultural center And then also as a place of natural beauty. People don't, we really are the forgotten coast and the forgotten inlands. The canoeing here is just spectacular, and getting out and hiking in the forest is wonderful. So I think that when you've got this combination of natural beauty, creativity in the arts, investment in the sciences, it kind of makes the complete package. Some people are focused solely on the science or solely on the arts, but the exciting thing about Tallahassee is there's a community that really is interested in learning about all of it. And we're just delighted to have, I don't know if any other national laboratory that gets 8,000 people at its annual open house, and we are not in a big city. So it's a wonderful event.
Well, and Tallahassee really is this nice harmony of science, arts, culture,
yes.
The nature,
yes.
And the pristine nature that you mentioned, like
yes.
The springs that we have and the canoe trails and the hiking trails.
The bird life.
I mean, people come internationally from all over the
Absolutely.
World for our birding trails
Absolutely.
And the birding. And speaking of culture, I heard that you have been known to sing as well.
Not here and now. Yes, I so when I was in a chamber choir in Los Alamos in Santa Fe, and we had a lot of fun singing madrigals as well as modern avant-garde music. We spanned quite a range, and when I told people that I was coming to Tallahassee, they mentioned the Tallahassee Community Chorus and Andre Thomas. And so I sang for several years in that choir, and I've really enjoyed that as well.
And that's another thing that's special about Tallahassee is no matter what someone's interests may be,
yes.
You know, there's just so many different extracurricular activities.
Yes.
I mean, I have a good friend who's really into knitting, you know, and so there's knitting groups. I mean,
I see.
Who knew? Who knew?
Yep.
Where can people go to learn more about the MagLab?
The best place is our website. We're nationalmaglab.org, all one word, National MagLab. Or you can follow us on Facebook, National MagLab, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. It's always the same handle, National MagLab. And we'll be posting information about the open house as the date comes closer. It's the last Saturday in February. And one of the exciting things about the open house is that it's a science fair, but it's a science fair inside a world-leading laboratory. And so you get to see the actual rooms, the actual magnets, and talk to the scientists that are working on these world-unique instruments and get a sense of what research they do. So it's a science fair, but it's a science fair inside a world-leading laboratory. And there's not many chances that you have to tour a cutting-edge research facility. You can also visit the Magnet Lab anytime. We give throughout the year, every month on the third Wednesday at 11:30 in the morning, we give public tours. And so you can sign up to take a public tour anytime, third Wednesday at 11:30 in the morning.
Thank you for sitting down and talking with us today and for your leadership. You know, the organization you're leading is a global leader, and for the impact you're making in all of our daily lives. Our lives, as you mentioned, the materials, the energy, and just keep doing what
Life
you're
itself.
Doing.
Well, thank you very much. You're too kind. I am having a great time in this job, and the folks here at the lab are wonderful to work with day in, day out. And any chance to popularize or publicize what we do, I embrace. So thank you very much for your interest as well.
Thank you for listening to the Think TLH podcast from the Knight Creative Communities Institute. If you want to learn more or hear other episodes, go to kccitallahassee.com/ThinkTLH. Please also subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. While you're there, give us a review. And for more updates, follow us at KCCI Tallahassee on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check back every Thursday for another episode of Think TLH. Our show is produced and edited by Allison Levitt, and I'm Betsy Couch, and you've been listening to the Think TLH podcast from the Knight Creative Communities Institute.